Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. First on the docket today, let's talk free speech. That's right, freedom prevails. Next, Alec Murdoch case, follow the money. Hey, you can make $10,000 if you have any information regarding Naomi Irion. I know it's spelled I-R-I-O-N, but it's pronounced Irion. Who knew? A crazy story from West Virginia. And when you're an alleged drunk driver who killed four people, what's the logical thing to do? Obviously, blame the city for letting them camp there. And then we have our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Now, you know the drill. If you haven't done so already, hit that subscribe button, hit that little bell so you receive notifications. And I say that because so many people say, I'm not getting my notifications. Well, there's one person to blame for that. Well, it's called YouTube. I think they do it intentionally. It's all part of the harassment package, probably because we're going to talk about free speech. I'm almost positive of that. And remember, if you can't watch us, you can always listen to us by downloading us on your favorite podcasting app. And like I said the other day, we just went over 700,000 downloads. Kind of a big deal to me, but you know, I know there's some people that get a million downloads a day, but you know, 700,000, it's a lot. It's a lot. Anyway, before we do that, let's hear a word from today's sponsor. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right, Crime Talk aficionados. It is Tuesday, March 29th, 2022. Let's go ahead and open the record here on Crime Talk. First, free speech prevails. Now, this is a case that came from the Colorado Supreme Court, and they unanimously, and you know how hard it is for any court to unanimously agree on just about anything? Well, it's difficult. But what did they do? Well, they struck down part of a statute, a 7-year-old statute regarding cyberbullying. Because, well, let's just say it was vague. It was overly broad. Nobody knew how it could be interpreted. That's called void for vagueness. So anyway, the state's always had this harassment law that you can't do something with the intent to harass, annoy, alarm, intimidate, something along those lines. Okay. Well, in 2015, the law was tweaked because a young lady attempted suicide after being cyber bullied. And well, basically, like I said, they said the law is overly broad. You can't say when it's going to be interpreted or not. And as Voltaire said, it is clear that the individual who persecutes a man because he is not of the same opinion is a monster. Voltaire. All right. Now, as written, the law could be used to prosecute people for constitutionally protected speech, is what the justices found. And the law could criminalize online communication as such things as simple as negative restaurant reviews, social media posts about public health protocols, irate emails, diatribes posted about public figures by disgruntled constituents, or antagonistic comments left on news sites. That's what the justices said could fall under criminal conduct, ladies and gentlemen. And if that isn't enough to scare you, well, there's more. The court went on and said the primary concern here is the invasive medium the government seeks to regulate, omnipresent electronic communications, but how much the statute impinges on or potentially chills speech is what the court was also very, very concerned about. And when they mean chill speech, it means somebody's not going to exercise their right to freedom of speech because the government could come say that you are a criminal for having an opinion that somebody else disagrees with. Could you imagine such a thing taking place in America where people are actually persecuted or canceled because somebody doesn't like their speech? And what's even scarier is you have a situation today where people are canceled, not just because of their speech, but because of their ideas. Tell me that is not scary in and of itself. Well, like I said, the court struck down the phrase intended to harass, and they left in place the rest of the cyberbullying statute, which prohibits communications that threatens bodily injury or property damage or is obscene, which is pretty much fundamental to most free speech cases. You can say just about anything you want, but if you make a true threat and you cross that line, that's when it gets very, very scary. Anyway, so the law has been struck down as it prohibits communications merely because it is intended to harass. Now you may say, well, that's great, Scott, but what was the context in which this was done? Well, this case came before the Supreme Court, involved a man who repeatedly emailed his ex-wife disparaging and vulgar comments back in 2018, despite her request that he stop. Now, the man then posted on Facebook that his ex-wife had contracted a sexually transmitted disease. He was charged with harassment and domestic violence, and he challenged the harassment charge on constitutional grounds. Now, as you see, it is these street lawyers out here making these arguments, protecting everybody's rights. And isn't it ironic? The DAs poo-poo this stuff, say, oh, you know, those defense attorneys, they'll say anything. The judges go along with it. The Court of Appeals go along with it. And then finally it gets to the Supreme Court and they say, no, enough. Anyway, and as I noted before, the statute was passed back in 2015 after a young lady by the name of Kiana Arellano. She was a high school student who tried to kill herself in 2013 after she was bullied on social media. And Kiana survived but was left paralyzed and unable to speak. She ultimately died back in February of this year at the age of 23. And according to her obituary, she was pointed to the cyberbullying law as part of her legacy. Now, obviously, as your mother told you, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. But guess what? The government can't prohibit you from saying things that offend you, okay? Life is tough out there, ladies and gentlemen. You got to have a thick skin. And it's sad that somebody would kill themselves or attempt to kill themselves because they were being cyberbullied. But in this particular case, the law went too far. Another example of the legislature trying to do something, to feel good, to show that they're doing something for all their constituents. But in the meantime, violating the constitutional rights of the citizens in which they reside. But yet, nothing will be done to the politicians who pass this on a feel-good way because it makes us feel good that people aren't going to be mean to one another, which is always going to happen, always has, and will continue to do so. You should read some of my comments that I get. Good thing I have some thick skin. Otherwise, I could have you all charged with criminal harassment in Colorado. Well, up until yesterday. Good thing I'm such a nice guy. And I believe in free speech. You don't have to believe what I say. I don't need a bunch of mind-numb robots following me around. We just want you to think about it. Have a little intellectual honesty when it comes to actually looking at these arguments, because so oftentimes these arguments are made upon political grounds and they're only for or against it because one political side is for or against it. Think for yourself, ladies and gentlemen. Think for yourself. And when you do that, you find out that most of these people, well, there's a lot of hypocrisy going around. And let's face it, we all know Everybody's a hypocrite. It's just a matter of degree. But if you can try to be honest, well, that's pretty good, because maybe you're not as... Well, just think for yourself, ladies and gentlemen. That's what we want everybody to do. Think for yourself. Question what people are saying, particularly those in power. Listen, I've met lots of people in government. They're not any smarter than most of us, okay? That's the truth. So think for yourself. All right, next on the docket, Alex Murdoch. What do we say? Follow the money. Well, guess what? People are following the money, and I love it because it shows that the good old boy club is basically being dismantled down there in the Lowcountry of South Carolina. Heck, it may be so cleaned up pretty soon, maybe even I could go down there and live again. Well, let's see what we're talking about today. The Yemassee, South Carolina police chief, a guy by the name of Greg Alexander, has allegedly received a $5,000 loan from Alex Murdoch. You know, because Alex Murdoch had all that disposable income because he didn't owe anybody any money, right? So he loaned $5,000 to the police chief on July 9th of 2021. Wow, what happened just a couple of days? Oh, that's right. About 4 weeks after the double homicide of his wife, Maggie, and son, Paul, at the family hunting property. Now, the police chief said that the loan went to his parents, but he was unable to back up any paperwork or documentation. And he also said he wasn't sure if his parents had paid Mr. Murdoch back. I'm sure if he had, the attorneys suing Mr. Murdoch would take that money and put it in a fund for all of his other victims. Well, Alexander and Murdoch are apparently lifelong friends. You know, and one thing I say, Mr. Murdoch, he sure does have a lot of friends. Have you noticed that? At least when he was in power and sprinkling all that money around. I wonder why all his friends haven't posted that $7 million bond. Well, Mr. Alexander, the police chief, is known as the fixer for the family and its influential allies. And how convenient that he just happens to be the police chief. Now, although not confirmed, some locals believe that Mr. Alexander, the police chief, may have been at the Murdoch hunting property immediately after the homicide, despite the property being outside of his jurisdiction. Now, as you may recall, Alex Murdoch is considered a person of interest in the double homicide case of his son, Paul, and his wife, Maggie. Now, there's also been reports that investigators may have evidence that link Alec Murdoch directly to the shootings. We'll give him the presumption of innocence. There's just reports. But Mr. Alexander, the police chief, is currently running for Hampton County Sheriff and is on the ballot for the Democrat primary, along with Anthony Bubba Russell and Chauncey Solomon. Now, Alexander's campaign received a $1,000 contribution from Alex's brother Randy on May 12th of 2021, about 4 weeks before the double homicide. And a few weeks before that, Alexander received another contribution from John E. Parker, who is part of the Murdoch law firm, Peters, Murdoch, Parker, Elsroth, and Dietrich. Mr. Parker was not the only PMPED lawyer who gave money to Mr. Alexander. PMPED lawyers Daniel Henderson and Lee Cope gave $500 and $1,000 respectively to Sheriff Alexander's campaign. Or I'm sorry, Police Chief Alexander's campaign. That's not all. Austin Crosby, who's also been linked along with others to the Murdoch deceased drug smuggler, Barrett T. Bulware, gave $1,000 to Alexander's campaign as well. And on the same day, an attorney that works at the firm gave $1,000 to the campaign. Mere coincidence? I mean, you got to love a firm that really gets behind all that. The way they can almost say, hey, let's make all these contributions so we don't exceed the limit. We'll just spread it around among the firm. Wow, it's amazing how that works, isn't it? On March 29th of 2021, Alexander campaign also received another $500 from attorney Corey Fleming, who, well, as you may recall, was recently indicted in connection with the alleged participation in Murdoch's scheme to steal insurance money from the Satterfield family. Now, Chief Alexander has denied any wrongdoing in connection with the Murdoch family. In an interview posted on his campaign Facebook page on March 11th of this year, he asserted he was a man of integrity who would not participate in a cover-up. That's why all the locals think, apparently, that he's the fixer for the family. Because The public doesn't talk or know anything, right? Anyway, his campaign page on Facebook includes a slogan, "I am not a cat. I don't cover up no doo-doo." Catchy. That's catchy, isn't it? Everyone should think about using that. Next on the docket, Naomi Irion. I know it's spelled I-R-I-O-N, like Iron, Irion, lots of things, but it's pronounced Irion. I know. The I is a long E. Who knew? Anyway, the FBI in Las Vegas, Nevada have announced a $10,000 reward for anyone that has information that leads to the missing Nevada team. Naomi was last seen in her car when she was sitting in a Walmart parking lot waiting for the shuttle to take her to her job. While waiting for the shuttle, a man approached the 18-year-old's car, gets into the driver's seat, and takes off with Naomi in the car. Now, police found Naomi's car on March 15th, about 1 mile from the Walmart, and on March 25th, the Lyon County Sheriff's Office announced that they had arrested Troy Driver, 41, at his home in Fallon, Nevada. Police believe the driver is connected to Naomi's disappearance and is being held on kidnapping charges. Now, as I stated, Naomi remains missing. Her family is pleading for help, saying that Naomi disappeared near Route 80. And yes, she could be anywhere in the country by now. So please be on the lookout for a white female, 5'11", green eyes, and dyed black hair. Anyone with information, call the Lyons County Sheriff's Office at 775-463-6620. Okay, are you ready for a crazy case? Okay, this is it. West Virginia. A jury has convicted a West Virginia woman for killing her mother and sister back in 2017 and attempting to stage it to look like a murder-suicide. Now, prosecutors alleged that Megan Hargan was angry with her mother, Pamela, because she would not give her $400,000 to purchase a home. Megan believed that Pamela favored her younger sister, Helen. You know, the old sibling rivalry thing. Well, Megan reportedly staged the scene to make it look like her younger sister, Helen, killed her mother and then took her own life. One of the victims was found in the bedroom and the other was found in the laundry room. The rifle that was used to kill both women was discovered in the bedroom, wedged between Helen's legs. Now, prosecutors' theory was that after the killings, Megan Hargan made fraudulent transfers of money from her mother's account to her own account, and Megan's younger daughter was reportedly at home during the double homicide. Well, the Fairfax County police were apparently able to quickly determine that this was not a murder-suicide, and Megan was indicted by a grand jury and arrested back in 2018. The trial had been delayed because of the pandemic, and the interesting fact was Helen's boyfriend testified during the trial that he was on the phone with Helen as her mother was killed. Helen told him that Megan killed her mother. Helen's boyfriend testified that Helen overheard her mother gasping for air through the crack in the door. Megan pled not guilty and has maintained her innocence, despite obviously being convicted by a jury of 12 on all counts, including murder in the first degree. Sentencing is set for October 28th. It's always about the money. And maybe a little sibling rivalry, but it's probably mostly about the money. All right, this guy, take a look at him. Enrique Rodriguez Jr., he's 24, and he is facing manslaughter, assault, reckless driving, and driving under the influence charges after he crashed into a homeless camp in Salem, Oregon, ramming his sports coupe into several of the tents and pinning victims under the car. Eduardo Zamacoa, whose daughter, Rochelle, 29, was one of Rodriguez's alleged victims, erupted in court on Monday, and Zamacoa demanded the judge not grant the defendant bail, saying that he fears the alleged killer would flee to Mexico. Zamacoa continued getting aggressive, saying, "I wish that I could kill his effing family," which is clearly inappropriate and maybe crossing the line as it relates to some free speech because it's probably considered a true threat. Well, we shouldn't do harm to Mr. Rodriguez's family, right? Because they're not the ones that were drunk driving. He was. Mr. Rodriguez was arraigned Monday on 4 counts of first-degree manslaughter, second-degree assault, reckless driving, and driving under the influence. Oregon prosecutors claim he was driving with a BAC, a blood alcohol level, of 0.260, which is more than 3 times the legal limit, when he allegedly crashed into the homeless camp, killing four and injuring two. Prosecutors claim that Rodriguez has previously been found in violation of various traffic laws dating back to 2014, including driving without a valid license and careless driving, which is completely irrelevant to the charge before him. So let's focus on what he's charged with now. In the courtroom, Judge Garnier nearly had to break up a potential fight between the families. And I can tell by looking at you, your face is shaking. You're obviously very upset. The judge told Eduardo, she had a part of my job is to make sure that you are respected and that everyone in the courtroom is respected. By the end of the hearing, but outside the court, Rodriguez's mother claimed her son was not a murderer and said the city should be at fault. She said there shouldn't have been homeless camp on Front Street. Now, the Oregon Department of Transportation officials were in the process of trying to clear up that homeless camp when Rodriguez allegedly rammed through it. They had posted the camp to be removed on March 17th, but had to give the campers 10 days to leave in accordance with the local government ordinances. And obviously, Oregon is grappling with how best to deal with the state's rising homeless problem before the new law protects homeless people sleeping in public goes into effect next year. Apparently more than 1,000 people sleep outside in Salem, which has a population of 175,000 on any given night. Apparently the governor, a Kate Brown, signed a bill into law last year that would protect homeless campers in public spaces from being removed. It mandates that any city or county law must be reasonable if it regulates city lines sleeping or keeping warm and drying or dry outdoors on public property. That's funny because here in Colorado, the city of Aurora is actually now banning urban camping. And sometimes when you're downtown, you can see when people are waking up from their urban camping. Sometimes they'd like to go on urban camping hikes throughout the city, usually including going to all the places for free food and then returning later in the evening for some more urban camping. And most of the locations are rather gross and disgusting and drugs that you could only imagine maybe in your worst dreams. They are there. So I get it. Everyone has a right to survive and there's no law against being poor. But like most cities are finally coming around to, we don't care where you go, but you can't stay here. We'll see how that turns out. Anyway, next on the docket today, our dumb criminal. Florida man was screaming for help as he trapped himself inside a porta potty. Now, bystanders called the Naples Police Department after hearing 34-year-old James Grouse shout for help. Upon arrival, police discovered Grouse's foot sticking out of the front of the porta potty door. Grouse said that he got his foot jammed and could not get himself out. Police ultimately searched Grouse and found a powdery substance that later tested positive for fentanyl. Mr. Grouse was placed under arrest and now faces several drug charges. Now, Mr. Grouse, you're not dumb because, well, you got your foot stuck in a porta potty. Who hasn't had that happen to you, right? I mean, come on. It could happen to anybody. But really what it comes down to is that you need to not have fentanyl. It's a dangerous drug and it's going to kill you. And the fact that you didn't throw it away because your desire to have the fentanyl was greater than your freedom. Pretty stupid. Anyway, Mr. Grouse, that makes you our dumb criminal of the day. All right, thanks for watching. Please join us tonight, 6 p.m. Mountain Time, for our live show. We'll see you then.